Hello and welcome to the Adoption and Fostering Podcast. It's been a sleepy few weeks here at Podcast Towers. Scott's been on a cruise, I've been having half term, wrangling children. So we decided we would release an interview that we carried out at the very, very beginning of the year and didn't release for a whole host of reasons. It's with Molly, and she tweets and Instagrams as Molly Mama Adopt. And we were talking to her in relation to social media, contemporary adoption, her experience of being a new adoptive parent, and her experience and perspective on all things social media. She's down with the kids, and like us, we're very many things, but down with the kids is not one of them, that's for sure. So we pulled together this episode, and needless to say, we will be back with you next week or the week after with an interview with the Children's Minister, Will Quince. So thanks loads for all of the questions and topics and comments that people have sent us through social media, direct messages, emailed us, all of that kind of stuff. If you've got any more topics, we're more than welcome to pull them together, and we're going to try and make sense of them and collate them into a sort of an hour's chat with the minister. Anyway, hope you enjoy this episode, and we'll speak to you soon. Bye-bye. This evening we're speaking to Molly, and she is you're down with the kids, aren't you, Molly? Molly, do you want to introduce yourself? Because if I do it, I'll make a total hash of it.
Well, I wouldn't say I'm down with the kids at all, but thank you. I'm Molly. I'm a mum of two in England. Me and my husband, we adopted in 2020, so we're 18 months in after bringing home a little 10-month boy who is just scrumptious. So he's 2.5 now, and I have got a biological daughter who was 3 when we started the process, and she's now 5 turning 6. So, we were 25 when we started the process, so I guess that's quite young. We were referencing young adopters is quite a lot, which I thought was a bit unusual. I just thought everyone adopted. we adopted in lockdown, which was very interesting. But I started the process in December 2019 and straight away kind of got involved with the adoption community online, looking for some support, just trying to find other people to relate to. I didn't really have any other adopters, or adoption wasn't really prominent in my life. So I joined kind of social media, initially under private accounts, to try and reach out. So I've been sharing my journey online for pretty much since December 2019 now, so quite a while.
Excellent.
So can I ask you, before that, would you have been a social media person anyway for other things in your life, or was it kind of just, how can I resolve reaching out to people?
To be honest, I wasn't kind of on social media publicly. I always had, every kind of profile, but privately. And I only really joined Instagram in particular, Twitter later on, to reach out, for that purpose, to try and find an adoption support network. And initially, I didn't do it to educate. I kind of initially did it for my own benefit. I wanted to meet other people, and I was private for a really long time. And then after my little man came home and, things were a little more settled, that's when I started to use my experiences to share more of our story on, particularly on Instagram.
Al and I are being messaged by our other halves about a holiday at the minute, and it's driving me crazy. So I'm going to have to silence my phone, I think.
If only we could all do this from the Maldives.
Absolutely.
That would be lush.
It would be, wouldn't it? Can I talk to you a little bit about a bit of backstory? Because I think we have mentioned people sort of going through the adoption process in lockdown as well. And maybe just get a bit of that, because I find that's really interesting. So you and I was 20, I think I was 26 when I started the adoption process. And I remember people, I remember feeling very grown up. But with hindsight, was a child in many ways. My wife was much older than me. Not much older. She listens. Oh, my goodness. I should just shut up. Right, I'll start that question again, and I'll have to cut it all out.
No, you won't. Leave it in. Can I be there when she listens to it? Thanks.
Yeah. Right. So what was it like, kind of, because obviously that was you started the process, you did your prep group, and that, but I presume your prep group was sort of like in person. And then did the actual assessment process go online?
Yeah, so we were quite lucky, actually. We started December and we got through stage one pretty much by January, end of Jan, beginning of Feb. So half of our stage two, which included the prep training, was in person. So fortunately, we got, you know, to be in the agency and the social work was coming to our house, and we got that kind of initial. We got to meet other adopters on the training who we've now got really good friends from. But then all of a sudden, it was like a switch flicked and it was, no, everything's virtual. But we actually had a really positive experience, to say the world was going absolutely crackers. I was, you know, I was terrified that everything would stop. But it didn't. Our agency were amazing and adapted really quickly. We only had about two assessments left, so we did them on Zoom. And then from then on, everything was just online. You know, we did approvals panel online. We did linking online. We had all the kind of child appreciation day online. And I actually found that for us, and I can only really speak for myself here, but it sped the process up. And I think that's probably because our social worker in particular was not commuting, because they were commuting miles and miles to their families each day. So they had a lot more productive time at home writing reports and, you know, moving things online. And similar for when we got to the family finding stage, my little man's kind of social work team were very much at home as well. So we flew through the process within 5 months, with that included. We were approved 5 months after we started with, you know, lockdown kind of factored into that.
I mean, I think for us old men, that's quite a scary prospect, isn't it? Because we're always saying that, you know, I mean, I was 18 months being assessed.
Wow.
But we were the first kind of same-sex adopters through the agency. So it was a little bit kind of, ooh, let's make sure we double dot those I's and double cross those T's. Yeah. Kind of. But I think even 5 months, that's really fast, isn't it?
It was. But you know what? It was probably the most intensive 5 months of my entire life. We were absolutely on our knees and we were parenting alongside it. You know, we were both in full-time work. We had a three-year-old who was sassy and in that full of attitude phase. So we were absolutely on our knees, but we got so much out of it. And I mean, the process normally, we were told about 6 months, but I think because of that lockdown at the end, we managed to speed quite a lot up and obviously get that panel date in a little bit earlier with thanks to our agency. So,
yeah.
Wow. I mean, that is interesting, though, because often we hear so many negatives, but I think that that's my experience of social work, is that you can get more done because you literally, you know, there's different problems, but that's not one of them.
Yeah.
And so the whole bit experience of matching, and I know that people talked about having to create sort of bubbles, and it's on the news tonight about May 2020 is on the news because of the infamous party. By the time this comes out, we'll know the full details of that, but so was it around that time that you're starting to have to go into introductions? So what was that? I mean, foster carers have to be in a bubble. You have to be in a bubble.
Yeah, it was really weird. Yeah, so we were matched with our, well, we weren't matched with our son. We got our son's profile before we were approved. And as soon as we were approved, we kind of flew through to the linking meeting, all virtual, flew through to matching panel in the July. And that really was kind of when everything was crazy and the world just stopped. And so we did have to isolate, you know, myself, my husband and my little girl were a bubble. And although she was allowed still to go to nursery, because my son's LA kind of prioritised her needs and routine there, so she was going back and forth to nursery still. And then the foster family also isolated as well. So by the time it came round to introductions, you know, there were no tests or anything at this point, but we'd all done 2 weeks in isolation. And during introductions, we were literally one bubble, including my mum, who was helping out with my daughter. So we were all just kind of one big bubble, and just literally between our home and the foster home, that was about it. So really weird, but I was just thankful it could happen, because I was so terrified of it just being stalled, like so many of my friends from Instagram, for example, were waiting months because their LAs just said, no, we're not doing anything.
Yeah. And did you sort of document that process on your Instagram account? And was that an open account or was it a sort of a lockdown account?
Yeah, I did. So we were documenting the whole process from, I think, November 2019, even when we'd even just registered our interest and was kind of looking into adoption. And I did pretty much ramp things up when we got to family finding, and would cover that, you know, keeping everything anonymous and really stripped back and basic. I was on a private account at this point as well, so none of my kind of stuff was public facing, so I knew who was following me almost. And I documented that journey through kind of lockdown introductions, not while we were there. It was very much we woke up, we did introductions, and I give a quick debrief at the end of the day. And I'm really glad I did, because I can't remember that time. It's such a blur, isn't it? You just, there's nothing as exhausting in my life as doing those introductions. And I look back on the highlights on my Instagram, which is, you know, where you save kind of the videos you've done. And I think, blimey, how did we do that? And there's so much that I forgot. So for me, it was important to document that. And most of the messages that I get are about family finding and introductions. So I found that it's quite useful for other people to see that process, how we were feeling, and just keep it really realistic, because you go into it so excited, but the reality of it is it's the most emotionally draining part, I think. And I always, you know, vow to be kind of real in what I share. Fully documented on there.
I think it's interesting, isn't it? Because we didn't have anything like that to be able to. You've asked three questions. I'm asking the questions.
pipe down
when, now. When we were lads, we didn't have that kind of opportunity to be able to kind of share it and stuff. And you've just mentioned, oh, there's a thing on Instagram where you can do highlights. Not a clue. Not a Scooby-Doo. Gone way over my head. Sorry about that. And I think that, you know, there was. I think blogs were just starting to come in maybe in 2007 when we adopted. I mean, for goodness sake, like, you know, and probably
showing
half
your
the
age
world.
Now,
yeah, I know. Half the world probably didn't even have access to the internet. So, you know, it's kind of, it's fascinating to hear that you can document. Oh my God, I sound like a 90-year-old man, but you know, it's fascinating to hear that you can document this stuff.
Yeah.
And that it's so accessible as well. Do you find that? Do you find that, you know, like people don't have to go too far to find something that you've maybe covered?
Yeah, I think so. So the main kind of thing with Instagram that I've used, and I can only speak from my own experience, but you've got hashtags, a bit like Twitter actually.
Yeah.
So you guys will use hashtags and you search it. So all you kind of have to do is hashtag adoption, hashtag UK adoption. And it brings up not only mine, but you know, everybody within the kind of Instagram online community, which is ginormous now.
Yeah.
And it's just a sea of posts about adoption. So I found things really accessible in November 2019 when I started my Instagram account. But now it's just a whole other world, because more, you know, big brands are covering it, and we're getting, you know, adopters in the media a lot more. And so I think that people are finding it way more accessible than previously.
I'm loving this episode. We should title it Young Woman Teaches Old Men How to Use a Phone.
I could tell you how to use the thing, you know, where it was numbered 1 to 9, 1 to 0, and then you spin it round. You remember them?
All right, yeah.
I have no idea what that is.
I do remember that. I used to have one in my family home hallway.
Oh, well, you're older than you look then. That's good.
Well, she was a very young child. It's a distant one of her first memories of them throwing it out. the question I have is, I think that we talked to a lot of people on Twitter, because we were kind of I'd seen a few things and I'd kind of go, I can't believe what I've just seen on Twitter, like an old person. You'll never guess what they're doing on their Instagram. But I guess my nervousness has always been that, or maybe it's just a stereotype that Instagram is a very much, it's a visual medium, and it's got a rep for, influences in sort of inverted commas.
Yeah.
So it's very much a showing off kind of environment, where it's very, it's very fluffy. And then to bring adoption, which is a very personal, very private matter, onto that forum, it seems like a contradiction. So how do you hold, I mean, what are your reflections on that?
Yeah, no,
perspective?
I completely understand that. I think Instagram is obviously known as the kind of visual social media tool. You've got Pinterest, but I think Instagram's more about, you know, two-way communication. There's definitely a lot of influencers on there, and there's a lot of adoptive parents that are big influencers with huge followings. And in terms, I think generally, and I can compare this because I have, you know, my adoption Instagram and my personal Instagram. My personal Instagram is very much filled with you know, not, well, yeah, kind of the showing off culture, you know, look at my new shoes, look where my family's been, look where we've been for tea, it's really fancy, here's a selfie in the Savoy, that kind of thing. That is me as well, I can't lie. But whereas my adoption one, I think because it's really community driven, I found it really different. And it's probably because I am very conscious about who I follow, that I only see, you know, the people who align with what I kind of want to see and what I believe in and what I'm there to do to educate and share and be a support and help people and, you know, raise the profile of adoption. And so for me, on the adoption side of things, I think because it's quite close-knit and you have the control of that, of what you look at and who you follow, I've not found it to be showy off it. I found it to be a really good community. And although it is visual, there seems to be the general kind of thing that everyone's really careful. I know a lot of agencies and local authorities are very aware that Instagram is a thing. We had guidance, you know, to say, you know, you can't show children's faces, blur things out, remain anonymous. And a lot of myself and my friends in the process had social workers check in the accounts, you know, to make sure that it was suitable, which is right, you know, for the safety and the security of yourself and your children. But I would disagree in this instance that it is about showing off. You know, I've found it an invaluable support, and I would hope that nobody kind of views mine as showing off, because a lot of my content, I'm not going to lie, is me looking like I do right now with my hair scraped up. I've not even sat down all day. I look like a bit. I do.
No, well,
I'm not even mad at you for saying that. I am.
Say what you like. Listen, this is rough. Look, my hair isn't even brushed.
But that's what my content is. It's real. Yeah. It's exhausting.
And that's really interesting. That is hugely interesting, because I think that when we think about Instagram, Al's right, it's about the influencers mm-hmm. and all that sort of stuff. But there is, so are we saying there is another side to Instagram that actually is less about that
dark and more side. About
the dark side?
Listen, the good side. Yeah, listen,
I've seen the dark side of Twitter this week, and I don't want to see it again, right?
Okay, yeah. I'm just saying. Well, I do have a Twitter account, and I've held off from it because I'm still getting to grips with Twitter, and it's a little bit scary.
Yeah.
So I agree with that. Yeah.
Okay. So that in itself is interesting, isn't it? This is a social media platform that we kind of think about social media as being the same regardless of the platform. And just what you were saying there, you know, I remember, because I sat on adoption and fostering panels for a few years, and I always remember, and no, I'm not going to mention any names, but a certain chair of one of the adoption panels that I sat on 10 years ago used to go, all right, now we need to talk about Facebook.
Well, I know it's a big issue. It still is.
Well, I went to a panel as a what's it called when you go to a panel just to thingy?
Observe?
Yes, that's it. Yeah. So I went to be a panel observer on another panel where this was, I know, yes, I am. I'm in my 90s now. I feel like I'm in my 90s tonight. So I went to observe on another panel where this person was chair of this panel. And this was like 3 years ago. And the same thing was, and now let's talk about Facebook. And
I'm sitting there
And I was there to kind of give them advice on how their panel was run and stuff like that. So I was able to kind of advise them on the fact that it's not just Facebook anymore. But, you know, that's...
it's a different world.
When you're dealing with old people, that's... You know,
things are desperate if you're the expert in the room.
Shut up, you. but also thinking about, and I know that we've had Helen Oakwar on the podcast before, and she's writing a kind of an update on her bubble wrap children, because that's all about social media. But it's from quite a while ago, so it'll be interesting to see how that goes. But it just is proof in itself that the world has moved on. Social media is a thing, whether you use it or whether your children use it. Children are using it younger and younger, let's be honest about it.
That's terrifying.
It is. And I was just going to ask you, kind of, your children are quite young still, I know that.
Yes.
But what's your kind of thoughts on that at this stage in the game? Because obviously we all have those kind of thoughts when they're younger, but actually the reality is of it, it changes so fast. It does.
And I know a lot of, you know, 12, 13, 14 year olds on social media, and I would be lying if I said it didn't scare me and Sam. we didn't really cover much of it in training because we were like, oh, we're having an old 2-year-old, it's fine, we've got a 3-year-old, yeah. we can worry about this in 10 years. But actually, it changes so quickly that we do talk about it quite a lot. And yeah. I think that we're both of the kind of mindset that we can never say, don't do that, we're not going to let you to our kids, because they're just going to do it anyway. And we'd rather create the environment where they're going to be really open and honest with us, and we can, you know, educate them about the risks and that, you know, they're using it safely. I mean, if they're like 10, then it would be a hard no. Yeah. You know, they'd need to be a suitable age. But I think it's something that we'd welcome, but just have to monitor really closely, particularly, you know, there's always the fear of, you know, your little man for us, you know, having contact on social media, which is a big thing, you know, in the news, you know, and we have that in training. And it's just having those open conversations that that could happen, and, you know, why it's a risk, and that there's other ways to go about things at the appropriate age. And I think that's all we can do, because, you know, I was 15 and my parents didn't know half the stuff I was doing. You know, they don't, do they? So it's like,
no.
But it's true. And so yeah. I want to be the parent that is not a, no, you're not doing it, but let's talk about it, and let's weigh up what could go wrong here, but how can we help this be safe? It might change. That's how I feel now.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, by the time they're using it, that might have, you know, the things
I know,
might have
Facebook might be gone. Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah, who knows?
Well, I was going to say, in a bizarre turn of events, my mother's 80 and she's on Twitter, and I have to monitor her because she's dangerous.
She's very dangerous. I've seen some of her tweets. She's very dangerous.
Is she a serial tweeter?
She tweets pictures, but she doesn't really understand what's going on. So she just connects with people like the Russian embassy and
gets
into conversations with them, which is really quite concerning. So my mother, the sleeper cell.
Yep.
See, whereas my mother, you tell her it's a mobile phone because it's mobile, mother, and you can take it outside of the house with you. Yeah. So that's my mother. And Facebook messages, I could wait weeks to even get an acknowledgement. So,
oh my gosh, I feel like Facebook messages is the only way I communicate with my mum. She's savvy on social media.
Tell you, we'll be careful what we say. She's listening. Can I ask then? Because one thing I've just been reflecting on recently is that even within the different sort of social media cultures that we've got different cohorts of people. So I was thinking, I see a lot of UK adoptive parents on Twitter, but very few US adoptive parents. And I was thinking on Insta, I know all the phrases. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm with it, as the young people.
The gram. Oh, no, that's another thing. We mustn't talk about that.
Oh, good grief. So is there, do you see sort of different communities? Because I look and I see sort of like, dare I say, there's the sort of yummy mummy kind of community.
Okay, that's really interesting, because I just think that it depends on who you follow. So from my perspective, I'm really careful who I follow, and I think that the community generally is very blended, but there's certainly groups that kind of interact more with each other because they relate. I think, you know, I, for example, tend to connect with a lot of other young parents or parents with young children. But then there's single adopters, you know, there's older adopters, there's parents who've done international adoption. And I do think that you find your people. I certainly did. And there's definitely, you know, a good 20 people that I keep in touch with and kind of follow religiously. But then you do have, you know, your adopters who have businesses or are kind of, you know, the influencer profile, which is great to raise the profile of adoption, and, you know, they've got maximum exposure. And I suppose that they kind of have a different output. You know, they might be getting sponsorship, they'll be doing more promotional things if they sell things. So I think everybody's there for a different purpose. And everybody kind of just finds their people. It just depend on who you follow, because that's how your kind of Instagram is formed, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that is fair. I think I do genuinely find it difficult. I don't know whether it's because I was thinking as well about Twitter. Twitter is very much a conversation-based kind of thing. But whereas I find it hard to engage in conversations on Instagram. It feels very much like a show and tell.
Too. Yeah.
And then comments, not conversations, if you know what I mean. Is that fair.
Maybe we've just got too much to say. Maybe that's what it's about. Maybe we're just like, we have no life, so that is our kind of platform. I don't know.
I would disagree. I think, oh, I know, if only. No, I would disagree on that, because I think if you're on, from my experience, if you're on the Instagram adoption community, you're there to communicate and you're there to engage. So I've always just found that I comment on loads of people's stuff and start conversations. You obviously have private chat as well, where I have kind of, you know, an adoption support group with lots of lovely ladies and my kind of key people that I love to message and catch up with. And a lot of people will post things, a lot of people respond with their experiences and share that, and then go comment back. Mm-hmm. So I think for me, it is really conversational, and that's what I love about it.
Is there any, because on Twitter it's notoriously a bit fractious, is there a sense of that on Instagram? Do you get those fractious conversations?
I would probably say yes, because social media is always going to have that side to it. From the people I follow, I don't see much of it, but you know, you hear amongst other people that there are kind of scenarios sometimes that happen, but I've not seen it kind of prevalent within the adoption community. I think it just depends on who you follow, who follows you, what kind of things you're sharing. And there's always trolls, isn't there? There's always trolls as well that trigger things, which I've found a couple of times, and I know a few people struggle with on the Instagram side of things. I have, yeah. It just comes with social media, I think. I remember the first time I got trolled, I cried. I was like, oh my God, I've been trolled. And I really took it personally. But it's just, I think it's just part and parcel of having that online presence. It comes with it, and you've got to be prepared for it when you put yourself out there.
I mean, was it targeted? Was it targeted? Was it malicious? Was it just having a go on general?
Excuse me.
I don't necessarily think it was targeted at me. I think it was coming from the kind of anti-adoption argument, and you know, someone had searched a hashtag. It's not someone that I never followed or I never seen on Instagram. It was kind of an anonymous account. And that tends to be quite a common thing that I found, and from speaking to other adopters on Instagram, that they found as well, that, you know, there will be people that troll your accounts, whether it's by the comments or by messages.
Wow, we've not seen any of that, have we, Scott, on Twitter? We've seen a lot of it on Twitter.
I have seen you guys on Twitter, and I know that's a lie.
Well, I think what's really interesting is it doesn't matter what platform you're on. If you're trolled, it can upset you to begin with. And I think I've made a conscious decision this year not to talk generally about adoption on Twitter, for the simple fact that you can be as supportive of different areas of the adoption world as you like. You can try and support people who are trying to do good things to help themselves. And I'm talking about adoptive voices here, really. You can do all of that. And it makes not one jot of bloody difference, because you still have, for half a dozen people that see what you're trying to help with, you've got half a dozen that really don't and think that you're just out for your own gain. So I've just made that decision this year, because actually I'm just fed up of being criticized for stuff, and I get enough of that at home. I don't need it online as well. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So, you know, 2022 is, well, listen,
I think that's just part of self-care as well, though, isn't it? It's not nice
as well.
Nice to have it constantly. No.
But there's also, you know, if you look at some of the kind of conversations that perhaps those other people, those people who are, you know, quite, what's the word I'm looking for without trying to call passionate. Them out and gaslight them. Yes, passionate from an opposite perspective. And then some of the conversations they have with their own people, they can be nice people.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, if it was just a case of and I've said this all along, really, if we were all working together on it, you know, whatever side we come from, then that would make a difference. But whilst we all kind of beat the crap out of each other online, it's just never going to work, is it? So, but online is only one area, you know, there's not everybody is online, although you know, I suspect as time goes on, that will be where most of the conversations are had, to be fair. And I know that the impact of some of the online discussions have had an impact on a lot of the agencies and the way they deal with things, recruitment, et cetera, et cetera. So we have to kind of accept that online is kind of here and it's here to stay. So, you know.
I agree. It's only natural after lockdown as well. You know, everybody's had to go online to find support and information that they need. So.
I do sort of question your logic though, Scott. Maybe we shouldn't, this is maybe a private conversation to have publicly. Let's go for it. Why the heck?
Go on. No, go on. Why not? Yeah, I'm quite happy. You know me, I'll answer anything.
Well, no, I kind of, I understand the desire to kind of withdraw into your shell because of, you know, that everything you said sort of is just criticism and gunned down. But I kind of think, well, actually that you, that's deplatforming. I don't believe you, is the sense it's kind of saying you shouldn't talk about this because you don't know anything about it. Well, actually, balderdash, I don't know what you know, but I know what I know. I think that I'm really keen that I keep talking about it. And I'm not out for incendiary conversations. I'm not out to provoke anyone, though I know I may, but I'm just not going to engage with the stuff that comes after what I say necessarily.
Yeah.
So is that a strategy?
What Molly said is quite a big part of it, because when I first joined Twitter, it was to look for support. And then there came a point when I started to work for Adoption UK where I went, okay, I want to use my position at Adoption UK to help others now because, you know, it gotten so far in. So I became less of Gay Adoption Dad and more Scott. And became an actual person rather than just a pseudonym that existed and, you know, didn't post anything, you know, too much. But as time has gone on, it's just become something that I wanted to do that for other adoptive parents, not for adoptees. I'm not there to support adoptees because I can't. I don't have that experience. I've not had that personal experience. I don't know, you know, what that looks like for them. I haven't got that. But what I have done is listened. I've listened to what they've got to say because actually their experience means so much to me and my sons, because my sons are now being, I acknowledge how they will have felt. I can't experience how they felt, but I can acknowledge how they felt and I can adjust that within my parenting. So that's what that's about. But the part that I don't like is where it kind of becomes this very direct and very nasty kind of, just vitriol. That's what I don't like, and I'm not going to put myself there for that, because, you know, I'm a non-confrontational person in real life. I'm not one of these people who likes it. So if you put it online, I have to keep and remind myself this is a person I don't know. It's a person that I don't know who's trying to rile me up. Okay, it worked for a good 2.5 years. Every time I got something vitriolic from somebody, it really upset me, really, really, I mean, like massively, to the point where I would lock my account down, I would block people, I'd do the, you know, all the stuff that you would do. Now I just mute or I ignore or whatever. And I've had to consciously make that decision within myself to say, no, you're not going to get me like that because I don't know you. You aren't a part of my life. You do not know me. You cannot speak in a way that you think you know me because you don't know my family setup. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I could go back to them and say, well, actually this and this, but I'm not going to, because that would just fuel the fire, if that makes sense. So for me, I just want to have a year off of kind of that conversation on adoption. And it's not that I won't comment on it. I'm just saying that, you know, for the next year, I'm not going to get involved in that kind of deep crap.
And then 23, you're going to come out swinging.
Yeah, swinging with both balls. Yeah.
I'm aware that we've got Molly on, so she can listen to how we feel about social media.
Yeah, I know. Sorry, Molly. Yeah, but you did ask me a question, and I'm going to answer it.
That's fine. You'll have got all your.
But Molly might have a comment on that. I mean, I don't know if you.
I understand that point, and I would almost agree that you've got to look after yourself first. That you didn't join, you know, social media for that purpose. You did it for support and, you know, to share experiences like me. And I would do the same thing because I would take it. I am a bit of a confrontational person, but I just haven't got the time to deal with the people that aren't nice to me. So I've just gone into 2022 setting boundaries and using that mute and block button where necessary. because I want it to be a supportive environment, and I want to still be here to message back the people that come with, you know, come to me with questions, because they genuinely are looking for support. That's what I want to do. So anyone who gets in that way, then, you know, sorry, bye.
You've no time for them.
Well,
no, that's fair.
Can I ask you, because you raised a point there, which you'd said earlier as well, that people come to you because of those, that kind of that collection of Insta pictograms. I know all the phrases. Where you were sort of going through the process, and people are sort of, people at that time when they haven't got children, so they've got lots of time at sniffling around and find you. So can you, what is it, how do you feel about people coming and asking for advice? And is that always good? Is there other experiences?
Yeah, good question. So for me, it tends to be prospective adopters that proactively kind of reach out to me. They've obviously found my account, seen that I've gone through the process, and then have messaged me to ask a question. And honestly, I feel really honoured that they do, because to me, I'm just there the same as I was November 2019. So when someone messages me and is like, oh, I'm really sorry to bother you, but I've got a question, and if you've got 5 minutes, I know you're really busy, but if you've got 5 minutes, will you just have a look? And I'm like, yes, of course, this is what I'm here for. And I feel really privileged that people, you know, feel that they want to reach out to me. It makes me feel like I'm doing something valuable, and I'm kind of fulfilling that purpose of what I joined Instagram for, to help and support and help try and educate people. I love it, and I love getting to know people that way, and knowing that I've contributed in the tiniest way to their, you know, their adoption process and adoption journey. But in terms of, a lot of people will message me, you know, just saying, I've got a question about stage one, stage two family finding. But there are scenarios where people message me in a real panic. And I think that's because they've seen me in real panic on, you know, sharing my journey. Yeah. They've seen the lows. They've seen me distraught when Sam broke his leg, thinking that we were going to get held back from introductions. They've seen me cry because I've felt just overwhelmed with grief, you know, on the kind of adoption order day. And so I think because I share that, people do feel like they can come in a bit of a, oh my gosh, is this for me? What do I do state? And I wish that I'd have done that when I was in their position. I didn't. So it's a real mix. It's mainly kind of just initial queries. But yeah, there's certainly people that are looking for support from people who've been through it that are not their social workers.
Yeah. And I think that that's a very similar situation to, you know, years ago, but in a different way, if that makes sense, because it wasn't online. Yeah. You know, the amount of questions that we used to get from either people who were going through the adoption process or same-sex couples who were going through the adoption process as well, because they were very wary about doing that, you know, all that sort of stuff. Al, you must have had the same when you first started to put yourself out there, like the adoption whore that you are, people asking you for advice and all that sort of stuff. And I get it less now, which is not a bad thing, because my experience wouldn't be reflective of your experience, Molly. So it's great that it's almost like a generational thing.
Maybe.
Where the younger folk are, you know, now.
But, I mean, I think my experience, I adopted after the stages were kind of kicked in, I think.
I thought you were going to say the Second World War there.
Yeah, the very dawn of 1926, the First Adoption Act, I decided. Anyway, no, I think that, I guess it's different for me because I kind of have a professional hat as well. So people come on quite often for technical questions or issues, especially around challenging behaviour, which is kind of my thing. Yeah. Which I don't mind at all, but I'm very conscious. Naturally, I don't like giving advice. I can tell you what I would do. I'm not going to tell you what to do. So I'm very careful that I don't get myself in hot water, but I also see a lot of advice being given that's utter bunkum, so that I do step in a bit there. I'm in a few adoption support groups, which has got prospective adopters in, and some of the stuff in there, kind of, I have to really bite my fist, because when people sort of talk about stuff, I'm go, but actually I'm not, you know, no one's getting hurt.
Yeah.
Unless people are getting hurt, and occasionally I'll email the moderators and go, you do know that a member is unraveling, spectacularly in in public, and you, they might need professional help. So I tend to try not to get involved with that sort of stuff. But I was going to ask as well, has there ever been any backlash against your openness from any professionals?
No. Do you know what? There hasn't. And I do have a lot of friends on Instagram who've not necessarily had backlash, but they've had social workers and, you know, local authorities or voluntary agencies with concerns, mainly for safety reasons, I guess, and kind of safeguarding. But I've had a completely different experience. So my agency, you know, follow me on Instagram. They're fully aware I'm on it. And my little boy's family finder and their kind of team are aware I'm on it and follow me on it. And they've just been really, really supportive, because I think that I knew the boundaries early on. I've never really crossed the line in terms of risking our safety or my son's safety. I've always been really, really careful and thought about what I'm going to post before I do. So there's never really been any concerns, at least shared with me, from their perspectives. But, you know, I still get lovely messages from them all, you know, just saying thank you for sharing your experiences and, you know, could you help us with this, or do you mind doing this? And I think it's great, because I think, again, they're starting to recognise that Instagram in particular is a really good support tool. And my little man's family finder, bless her, I was on holiday and I got an email, and I'd had a couple of glasses of wine, maybe a bottle, I don't know. And then she sent me a really nice email saying that she'd been referring all of her families to my Instagram. And I just started crying over my paella, just because I was so honoured and thought, that I know it was really good paella. just saying, you know, I'm so happy that they're supporting me. So yeah, I've honestly, hand to heart, never had any backlash, but I can't speak on behalf of everyone, because I know people who have.
Yeah. And I was just going to go on to mention that as well, because a lot of it is the story that you're telling as well, isn't it, on social media. So whose story are you telling? Are you telling your story, or are you telling your child's story? And I think that's a really important part of what you share online, isn't it?
I agree. I mean, I always say that I just go with my own kind of gut, and other parents can do what they want to do, and I'm not going to judge at all. But for me, I am so conscious not to share my son's story. We don't even share it with family unless it's for a safety purpose. It is purely for me as a parent, and things will tie into that. Like if we're having attachment issues, then I will share that from my perspective and how I'm suffering, getting support for it. But I won't necessarily go into why that might be, or my son's past and what's triggered that, because I don't want him to grow up and be 17 and look back at this Instagram and think, oh my God, like, mum, what were you thinking? How could you do this? So again, I always post thinking, would little man look at this in 10 years and think, why on earth has she written that? Yeah. So I'm really conscious to share it from a realistic parent perspective, because they're the only people I can support. I can't, like you said, Scott, I can't support people who've been adopted, because I can't relate, and that would be really wrong of me because I've not experienced that. Yeah. So I'm really careful to keep it on an adopter level with my story.
Well, that's fantastic.
That's fantastic.
Thanks.
Well, no, to be sure.
To be sure. But I think that's the nuance, isn't it? Because I think I wrote a blog for years, thousands of the blasted things, and I always...
So you got an MBE for his blogs.
That's not why I got an MBE.
Nothing else.
Why I got an MBE. But I think that was the nuance, is that if you focus on your own, you will always get the accusation, oh, you're being a narcissist. And you go, well, yeah, maybe I am. But what do you want me to do? Tell my child's story? Then if you're going to have to choose, you'll get me. And I think that's just a really healthy way.
Are we not entitled to put it out there so we can get help and advice as well? Because actually, you know...
That's it.
I think so, because let's face it, not all the support that we can get from it, don't get me wrong, a lot of agencies really good, but a lot of agencies not so good. You know, we need somewhere to be able to access the support.
Yeah.
So why should we not be able to get support to be able to help our children to flourish and to, you know, to be the best?
Absolutely agree.
I mean, you know, we could go into the argument about, you know, parenting and blah, blah, blah. But that is effectively what we're looking to do, isn't it? By kind of saying, look, I'm having an issue with this. Is there anybody out there who's had experience of that? Because I really want to help my child.
Yeah, and for me, I don't have really, I mean, I do now, but, you know, a year ago, I didn't have a local adoption support network. I don't have friends my age who've adopted, you know, they're all having biological children. So it's really important for me that is my only real outlet, you know, Instagram, when I've had a really bad day and I need to feel normal and that I'm not doing a bad job. It is Instagram, because I know that the people there get it. And, you know, I wouldn't expect anyone who hasn't adopted to get it. Yeah. But for me, it is about that. It's about, you know, reassurance for yourself as well.
And that's probably a motivation by almost all the people I know on social media.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
I think that we've used up lots of your time, and
I've had lots of
dry.
Fun.
I've had so much fun as well.
Yeah, it's quite a poppy podcast for January. I was feeling a bit January blues earlier, so that's good.
Me too. I'm
this kind of chat. And I was expecting to come on and go, oh, just hate Instagram, love, to be honest with you.
I've not converted you then yet.
I mean, I use it, but not like, you know,
It is a bit fiddly, to be fair. I feel like you've got to commit.
Yeah, you've got to work at it, haven't you? Whereas Twitter, you can just go blur and then leave it.
Yeah.
See, that's why I'm not good at Twitter. I can't just go blur.
And to be honest, we've got great faces for Twitter. you know,
you've got lovely faces.
The oil painting, Sim and me.
Speak for yourself, mate. When I'm normal, I'm all right. Thank you.
Yeah. A strong average. What's pin interest?
Yeah, Pinterest. What is Pinterest? Come on, just
what is Pinterest?
Oh, I'm not a Pinterester. I feel like you have to have a lot of time for Pinterest. It is a thing. Oh my gosh, it's such a thing. But it was such a thing when I was in high school. So Pinterest is like you just go on and then you almost like it is, or maybe like 5 years ago. I don't know. That's just my kind of millennial perspective of it. You go and you pin things to a board and then you theme your board. So like you have one for like house renovation or like parenting. You
know, it's really been like a mood board online.
Yeah. So it has a purpose. If you're going to read,
I know what a mood board is.
But to be fair, a lot of teachers use it. You know, a load of teachers use it for like classroom inspiration and like kind of activities for the children. It does have a purpose, but just not in my life.
It's like post-it notes for young people.
I wouldn't say it's for young people. It's a mix, I would say. You will have to get on Pinterest and
Do you know what's interesting is I kind of see Pinterest posted a lot on the Facebook and on the Twitter. And I know that when some of our regular listeners who really take the pee out of us listen to this, they're going to go, oh my god, and they're going to start tagging us and stuff. I just know that's going to happen, because that's how our lives worked. Is there any other platforms that we need to be aware of? Do we need to go near TikTok? Al's a TikToker.
I have seen TikTok emerge a little bit, but I think that on Instagram, you've got the same kind of facility. So a lot of us don't need TikTok.
Yeah.
You've got the kind of reels, and they're a lot cleaner than TikTok. I mean, I am obsessed with TikTok, but not for my adoption purposes. Yeah.
Excellent.
So is my 15-year-old.
Yeah.
In fact, I need to check his TikTok, because apparently there's a video on there that maybe is a little bit
Do you know what? As you were talking about all this, I had this revelation halfway through, and I thought, do you know what? When I was like you, young, and you know, smooth of skin,
Molly,
and
she's
all of that,
vilified by the time she leaves. Like she's
no, right.
Okay. It's just good skincare, Al.
Something you might learn from that, Al. Yeah,
well, that ship sailed. what was that desire? I was thinking about that desire to kind of like share your journey with people and that. And actually, I was on a BBC documentary when I went through your process.
That's amazing. I bet that was a really big thing back then, Al.
Right, that's the interview over. You talk to me like I'm an old man.
I'm joking. That is still a big thing, though. They are happening. And do you know what?
Telly.
Thanks. Yeah, the telly. Well, do you know what? No, Netflix BBC is the thing now. I feel like telly's getting old. But through Instagram, I have been so lucky to be on the telly and do loads of things because people have found me on Instagram, not just, you know, adopters, but brands and people who are actually starting to listen and raise the profile of adoption as a really valid route to parenthood, like Mamas and Papas and BBC and Sky News. And they're all reaching out to adopters and, you know, because they want to listen and share.
Yeah.
So you could still be in a BBC documentary. Who knows?
Well, so it strikes me that
4 million viewers got. There was 4 million viewers every episode.
That's nice. Yeah.
I got recognised in B&Q.
Nobody remembers you. Nobody remembers you.
I got recognised. And you can, it's still on the internet, but I'm not telling you where.
Oh, I can find it. Don't worry. I keep meaning to look.
I'm an FBI detective when it comes to the internet.
If you find it, Molly, send me the link, yeah? Because you'll probably find it much faster than I will. But I keep meaning to look for it, to be fair.
But what was interesting, we got all, because they got permission for our children to be shown, and their story was, so it followed them.
Oh, wow.
And it followed us. And so they were completely on it. And I was in B&Q one day, and it was halfway through the series had gone out because there wasn't six episodes. And I was in B&Q, and my son, who was just two, and he was in the trolley thing, and I was looking for bits of wood or something. And this woman came up to me, and she burst into tears. No, that's not that uncommon. and she
said, "That's what I did."
And because there was a sense of jeopardy in the documentary. Are they going to get the children or not? Because there was all kinds of things going on. And she said, you got your child. And she was...
Oh, my gosh. Like, years I would have bawled my eyes out.
Stop us in the street.
Is that not classed as a spoiler? Like, she knew the end of the story before it had gone out on air. That's not
You can't
good,
keep me locked up in a cupboard. Well, can you, for 6 weeks?
Apparently you can.
So
it sounds to me, it does sound to me like, just, you know, as an example, Facebook was a thing, Twitter was a thing, Instagram is a thing, because, you know, I was in the McCain advert, just saying, me and my family, McCain chips. I'm not sure if it's for chips or just McCain.
Oh my
generally.
Gosh, you guys are my claim to fame.
I know, but ITV, but isn't it
BBC?
I don't know. I didn't watch it or look at it, but anyway. Whatever. But I'm just saying, like, it seems like the platforms have moved kind of, you know, and something else will come up in 5 years, 6 years' time. Somebody will be on that. You know, we know from YouTube, as an example, you know, YouTubers who have...
Oh, yes.
Who have a massive income from YouTube.
Oh. Not me. Again, on there, not for the kind of exposure, but, you know, yes, YouTube, for some people, you know, you hear it does, but again, there's only a few of us adopters on there, but we're starting to get some kind of exposure on there, which is great.
And we should you aside, Molly, there are some adopters who should not be on YouTube because some of the stuff that they post is absolute BS.
Rubbish.
But anyway, that's a different conversation to be had elsewhere, I feel.
Well, it's part of the conversation that you'd hope viewers would be savvy to what they're watching. Like, I'm savvy. Like, you're savvy. You kind of go, this person's a flake, whatever.
Yeah, true. But if you're vulnerable at the beginning of the process and you've not done your research, your homework, you know, you could get kind of led down a path that you think...
Yeah, you hoover up everything, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then, you know, it depends what you look at, doesn't it? That's the thing.
That's true. Anyway, we were about to finish and I took us in a different direction. BBC
One, 9 o'clock. I know.
BBC One at 9 o'clock, 3 million viewers for 6 episodes. So shut your face.
You said four a minute ago.
I'm sure
we're
going down
one
now.
Episode and it was 3 million. Look, it was more than...
It's probably 4 million. It was 4 million on the first episode and then it went down after that. That's probably what...
Once you saw Ralph.
And do you know what it was? It was his bleach blonde hair that gave it away.
Yeah.
Nice.
I was 20. I was but a child, 26 on the telly. Anyway. Oh,
seriously, Molly, if you find that, you must send me
I will, 100%. I will.
Yeah.
it's deeply, deeply embarrassing. Right.
Yeah. Well, I feel we could talk about this all night, and we really could.
I know.
Because I think social media is such a massive part of everybody's life now.
We should make Molly our roving social media correspondent.
Oh my gosh, I'm no expert.
Platforms, we'll get her back on.
Well, thank you, Molly. It's been actually really eye-opening. I've had a lot of fun tonight, so thank you for curing my January blues. It's been a pleasure chatting to you.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. It's been so much fun.
Thank you.
Excellent. Yeah.
And that's us.
Look after yourself.
Yeah, look after yourself. Anchovy.
Bon Jovi. Thank you.
Anchovy.